in Central, and somewhat funny that a woman was using the very phone I had intended to use, and it's in a row of six of them, and I don't think the other five even work, although they used to. Now it's September 13th, and just totally by chance, nothing to do with the anniversary date a couple of days ago, but I happened to find my big box of bad, big box of bad news a couple of days ago. And that's the box where I stuff all the newspapers and magazines from the days and weeks after 9/11. And I threw out most of them. I had like duplicate copies. I guess I was being an asshole and thinking I could make money from them somehow, but I would never do something like that. But in the moment, you think stupid things. So, but the front page story of the Times, it still remains such a... Nothing captured the chaos and the confusion better than that, as far as I'm concerned. Nothing that I've read. And I read through it again, and every feeling I had that day, every... and as well as every experience everybody I've ever talked to described, it all came back, all the... It felt so alive, and that piece of writing, which, you know, was being done basically as events unfolded, because nobody knew what the hell was going to happen next, if anything, is profound. I mean, it just, you felt like you were on the street. And, you know, since then, I've filled in a lot of stories, and every other sentence in this story reminded me of something that someone else had told me about where they were that day. And, like, I remember Marina, this woman I used to know, who had since moved back to Russia. She was saying she had a job downtown that day, and she came out of the subway, and there was smoke everywhere. And then these police officers emerged from the smoke, and they're waving their arms, telling everybody to run the other way, because the first building had already come down, and they thought the second one was going to come down sideways. And everybody just ran like, I don't know what you compare it to, but they must have felt like they were being herded. And I was talking to one of the bartenders that I used to know, and he saw what was happening on TV and called a friend of his who lived down in Battery Park. And his friend didn't know what the hell was going on, but it sounded like there was smoke filling up his apartment or something. And he really didn't understand what had happened. And then as he was talking, he heard this terrific thud. So, boom! And that was the second plane. And my friend and I said he dropped the phone. It was so loud. So, I didn't know that. I actually thought that the impact didn't make that much sound. Maybe it's just the first one, but nobody really has that closely documented, the first impact. And then I remember I dated a stripper for a little bit about a year ago, and she was describing how she was getting ready to get into her bubble bath, and she heard all these people screaming, and, you know, she too wasn't really aware what the hell just was going on, what had happened, and she's just getting ready to get into the bubble bath, and the screams all stopped. So when I was, and there were just, I could go on and on with the accounts I've heard from people who were there that day. I met a guy who was on the very last floor you could be on without getting hit or without getting trapped. I forget which floor that was, but maybe 80-something. And he described the exit process as very orderly, and nobody panicked. Maybe because nobody expected the building to come down, but I don't remember now which building he was in. But he described the exit as pretty orderly, and I just asked him, how do you deal with this? You know, how do you cope? And he's like, you know, you just move on. You're here. Something like this could happen anytime, anywhere, and I'm here. And he's a... I've never seen him again, but he seemed like a pretty straightforward guy. When I was traveling in Nebraska and the Dakotas, anybody I told that I was from New York had first thing they asked me, like, where were you? And he said, I told the story. I was coming out of the subway at, must have been 7th Avenue, to go to work. And the first plane flew right over my head. And I looked up, and this is another piece of reportage in that Times piece, was all the people who heard this low-flying plane, this rumbling of the engine, and it sounded like it was slowing down. And everybody thought the same thing I did. Well, that's a low-flying plane, but hey, whatever. And so when I got up, by the time I got up to, that would have been 8:46, so by the time I got up to the office, it was already on TV. There were TVs everywhere. I was working at CNN at the time, so there was TVs all over the place. And it was already, the first impact was already being televised, or the aftermath of it. And I remember thinking, well, this is kind of cool, actually. I mean, obviously, people were probably killed, but on the upside, I was looking forward to the world turning its attention to the Twin Towers and getting a new respect for being able to withstand this kind of thing. And maybe it'll be like the Empire State Building when it opened for business the next working day after that jet plane or a fighter jet flew into it. And, you know, that was my positive thought, my positive hope for the situation. But then the second plane hit, and that's when people in the office really started freaking out. And I made direct eye contact with these people that I barely even knew. And we were all looking at each other like, what the hell is happening? And I called my mother and woke her up. Or I didn't wake her up. She had just got tatted up. And, you know, at this point, I was freaking out a little bit. I called her and I said, turn on your TV. And she's like, oh, why? And she probably thought I was going to be on or something. And I was like, just turn it on. We're being attacked. And even as I said those words, I couldn't believe they just slipped out of my mouth. But so she turned on the TV, and true to, she never really changed and wavered in this attitude about it. She's like, at first, like, this is nothing compared to the bombings of England in World War II, or bombings of London. And, hey, maybe she's right, you know, if we'd been bombed like this, like that, at random, I think that would be pretty scary. But that doesn't really matter in this moment, does it? I never said anything like that, but she just was never impressed with 9/11, and she thought she was never at peace with the fact that I had moved to New York, that I had moved away from home and lived in New York all these years. And the first thing she said later that night was like, so I guess you'll be moving back home. And I said no, I live in New York more than ever. And so we talked for a while, and I just let her know that I guess I'm okay and nothing's going to happen to me, I guess. Or who knows, but she was also unimpressed with the anthrax attack later. But anyway, back at the office, I got off the phone, and three or four guys from the server center, I didn't realize that CNN had web servers at the Twin Towers or in any offices there. This is the first I knew of it. Not that I had any reason to know. This was the far back end, the techie guys. But they ran into the office, and they just sat down, and I tried to calm down, and I think somebody came over and said, look, guys, if there's anything you need, just let me know. I forget who would have said that, but just somebody that recognized the gravity of the situation. What remained kind of eerie about all this, the web servers we had down there were for internal use only. It was intranet, I guess, and what became eerie about it was the screen that I accessed, like everybody's home screen, was for this intranet, and it remained locked on, I forget what time it was, it might have been 8:46, which is when the first impact was, or it might have been 9:02, I think there's a second one, 9:00 something, whatever time it was locked on there for weeks, and I'm not sure, really sure why that would be, because if the server's knocked out, then why am I even able to access it, but some somehow the connection to that intranet was severed, and content wasn't allowed to be updated to it for a long time. I mean, similarly, I remember how WNYC was just silent for months afterwards because their antenna was on top of one of the towers. I had been down to the towers just the week before on Labor Day. It was the last time I got close to them. And I do remember thinking, I didn't even take pictures of it because I took them for granted. And one day I'm going to find the picture that I took from the top of the Twin Towers. I took at least a couple of them back in probably 91. Might have been New Year's Day, 91. That was the day I went to the Statue of Liberty. I did all that touristy stuff all at once, or all that I ever wanted to do or intend to do. I guess where I started to lose, I mean, it felt like the world was united in revulsion, if you will, and I think that was true for a little bit, but then I think it was when the casualty count started ticking down that people started getting cynical about it. You know, like, you expect me to feel bad about 1,000 people, and tell me it was going to be 6,000 or something. Like, Juvan ordered 6,000 body bags to the scene, which made sense at the time, right? Or it seemed to. Yeah, I just remember the following weekend, I guess the 15th, I started playing some of the CDs that I'd been listening to, you know, the week before. It felt like I hadn't listened to this stuff in years. It felt like a long time reunion or a homecoming. And then I went down there 6 months later. And I came out of the subway and I just looked up and it was like a couple of just giant holes in the sky. That's what I always think of it. That's how I think of them now. Those are just a couple of giant holes in the sky.